Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for a second trip here, but it was a very important item I thought would be vital for the council to know. The mobile gear fleet and the, a lot of the representatives, very important representatives in the lobster fixed gear fleet as well. We've talked to some of the scallop representatives. I can tell you that the three industries are very close. I would say we're pretty much there. We now need to spread the word a lot further to our constituents on gear. Understanding and making sure that we don't have a gear conflict on Area 2 primarily. And just to share with you, the time periods have to do with June to October. We've working to June 15th to the end right now in the area 4130 to 4150 being a fixed gear area in those months. We also have the spawning closure or the, what we're not sure what the rationale was, but we're assuming that the spawning closure from February 15th to May. So it looks like the three industries are going to be able to work that out. We're hoping that the council seriously considers that, you know, we're sure we're going to be able to work something out and put it into our operations plan based on that negotiation and discussion with the, with primarily the lobster fishery. Sounds like the scallop concerns would be more north of the 4150, and that's also not a conflict with the mobile gear, I mean the fixed gear. So just wanted to make sure that you... you had the benefit of that.
Aaron?
Thank you. Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center. I just wanted to reinforce some of the comments that have been made earlier, let you know that we agree with many of the comments that were made, particularly Ben Martens and Jeff Smith. I also would encourage you to take a look at Graham Sherwood's work. Some of that was presented at a recent workshop held by Gulf of Maine Research Institute this past summer looking at cod stock structure. Also to that issue of stock structure, there's morphometric evidence, you know, study of body shape, body structure, particularly for cod, which was also done by Graham Sherwood, that shows that the fish in and around the Cache's Ledge area are actually distinct. They're unique from some of the other fish, in even in the Gulf of Maine. So there's a distinction between the population of fish on Cache's Ledge and the western Gulf of Maine area. There needs to be some consideration given to that, in that the of Gulf of Maine cod right now allows you to catch cod in any of those places, but in fact the Cache's Ledge closure may be protecting a unique subpopulation. I'm not saying don't open a portion of that. I'm just saying that I think some consideration needs to be given to that in addition to the point that Jeff raised earlier as well. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. I'm going to start right there at the end and work up Doug and then Mark. And.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me first crack at this. as you know, the council has been working extensively for way too long on the habitat amendment, but we have come up with some a scientifically based rationale for potentially making adjustments to those habitat areas. And as we went through this process, we recognized that there was ground fish mortality closures on that, and it was us that brought it forward this consideration that we need to also make adjustments to the ground fish mortality closures because has been argued here, we're under hard tacks right now. So these mortality closures may not be needed, but we must remember that there are other closures here, and I think primarily this has been considered. That we may want to keep in place because of spawning and a variety of other things. The original motion that was made back in August for opening up these closed areas through the framework as opposed through the having it done through the sector plans did include the area above 4150 would still remain closed in a closed area too. And as you know, I sent a letter to this council back in January identifying some of the large numbers of buried lobster females that are in that area up there with data from VTRs as well as some data from some sea sampling trips that indicated that they were at some times exceeded the total landings. I mean the total harvest in some months. I'm glad that Vito brought up the negotiations that are currently going on between the between the ground fish, the lobster, and the scallop industry. But my concern as ASMC lobster chairman is that we need to have something in there to we can't leave those to the sector plans. We need to have some kind of a seasonal closure out there. And one of the things that I just noticed on Tuesday of this week when I finally got a draft of the document that there are some areas above the 4150 line that are going to be considered for opening here. And given the large numbers of lobsters in that area, I can't support this anymore. Originally, I was going to support this as consideration for an option in the framework because of the what's going to happen potentially on May 13th. I wanted to have it analyzed. I still had some concern about whether this should be an amendment or framework, but where I see that has been modified and there is no agreement and there is no management measure in place to prevent mobile tending bottom gear from accessing those areas where there are large concentrations from June through October of buried female lobsters. I can't support this anymore, unfortunately. And maybe Terry might have something that may change my mind, but at this point, that has changed my perspective here.
Yeah, to that point, Doug, should this motion pass, there's a follow-up motion that addresses the issues you've just raised.
I'd like to see that motion before I vote on this.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously a difficult issue. On the one hand, I strongly support access, ground fish access to closed areas from the overall perspective, giving people flexibility to catch the access to meager catch limits we're going to be able to afford them. But I do have some concerns about defined scale spatial structure that we don't really fully understand. It is true that the catch limit, you know, constrains the overall catch, but it doesn't necessarily protect it over groups of fish that exhibits fine scale spatial structure reproductive fidelity and so on. So I have some concerns about that. And I also share Doug's concerns about, you know, the lobster, and hopefully we'll hear a solution to that. We both sit on the commission and have primary responsibility for lobster management. So hopefully there'll be a solution to that. And the other issue, of course, is the procedural one. And we do have a an omnibus habitat amendment plodding along and working together with groundfish to assess the groundfish mortality closures and the needs for those. To some degree, this gets out ahead of that, so I have some concerns about that, but I'll leave it to the agency to worry about what lawsuits might flow from this should this come to the fore. But on the whole, I think the motion has been crafted as carefully as it can be to negotiate to navigate the shark-filled water, so I'm likely to support it at this point. I hope to hear a solution to the lobster problem.
Dave Gaethel.
Okay, I wanted to mention a couple things that the public mentioned because I think there's some misconceptions here about the Western Gulf of Maine closed area. It's a sliver on the eastern side. It's deep water. It's not where the recreational fishery fishes. Similarly with caches, Vast majority of caches still stays closed. This only opens up deep water around caches. So I just wanted to get that on the record. The second thing I wanted to say is either you believe in hard tax or you don't. Now, I personally don't. I never have. I don't think hard tax end overfishing. And I think it can actually make it worse. But anyway, the point is that the environmental industry and this council have backed hard tax in sectors. So apparently everybody else believes in them. And I want to remind people, we're under a hard tax fishery. These are mortality closures. They are not habitat closures. And I also want to say for the record that there's no evidence in temperate zones that closed areas have any effects on fish stocks. Now, fish respond to three basic things in temperate zones. They respond to bottom water temperature, food, and sex. And bottom water temperature determines where the other two occur. So to that end, and that's why closed areas and temperate zones don't work, because the fish swim, they don't stay. This isn't the tropics. And, you know, to that end, I still support round fish spawning closures, and those affected in this measure. We excluded the areas in Area 1 and Area 2 during round fish spawning. We have also set up inside, through the state of Massachusetts and the federal zone in Whaleback, spawning closures. I continue to support them. I hope this council will make every endeavor to identify more discrete areas to close during spawning. I think those areas exist on the backside of the Cape. I think they exist on George's Bank. And I think one of our big problems with George's Bank card, whatever the stock boundary structure is, are the fact that there are no spawning closures for cod on George's Bank. The areas, closed Area 1 and closed Area 2, were primarily closed for haddock. And that's why they haven't done anything for cod. So, let's see, what else have I got here? As I said during the listening session on day one here, I think we have to admit at some point that certain things don't work. This has been a 16-odd-year science experiment with closed areas. If closed areas work, we should have overflowing groundfish everywhere. Instead, we've got a disaster declared. So apparently, not much. So I think it's time to, you know, admit when something doesn't work and move on. So to that end, I support the motion.
Going up this side of the table, anybody? Terry Alexander, then Frank Blount, and John Bowen.
I'm going to support the motion. I have a long history of fishing in the Cassius area and the eastern edge of the Jeffries closure, Western Gulf of Maine closure, I guess you call it. And that would open us up to fish on some unutilized species, redfish, pollock, monkfish around Cassius, and redfish and pollock around Cassius. It opens up pecs, sigbees. Those have all been closed, and that would be great for our small boat fleet at home. The guys work the edge of that area now, so they'd be able to get up on top of the lumps and stuff. So I'm going to support the motion.
Frank Baum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to the Groundfish Committee and after the Groundfish Committee, I've probably had more communications with people on this particular issue than almost any issue in all my time on the council. The Western Gulf of Maine, the area that's scheduled to be on here that with the hash marks that could be open, goes back to, I may have been the one that proposed it probably 12 years ago or more. When we first did the Western Gulf of Maine closure, we talked about opening up the deep water for access. We were told, came up a couple of times, time and time again, the service told us we could not open that area because it offered other benefits to other fish than just what we were trying to open it for. It came up at least 3 or 4 years in a row when we were doing things. We were told we couldn't open it. Right now, I believe Gulf of Maine haddock need a reduction. One of the reasons we were talking about opening that area was for Gulf of Maine haddock, for access to them. They're looking at a reduction. I don't think we should be doing this in a framework. I don't think it should be in the sector ops plans. There should be modifications made. I think this is the wrong way to do it. I supported it in the committee, but I will be voting against it today.
John Boyd.
I'm going to speak in favor of it, and if the motion passes, it's going to allow us to review these exemption requests. I think we said we were going to substitute one form of managing fisheries for another form. And so we put in place one form, and now the question is whether or not, having put in place one form, we're going to honor that deal. And we've got hard tax. We put that in place, and now the question is whether a major element of the prior regime is going to be left in place or whether it's going to be removed. And this motion is a test of that. I think that and I think that in the testimony from those in the audience, I think there's more agreement than might be apparent. I think there's more agreement on the area should be opened. It's a question of when and how much study and by what mechanism than may be apparent. I see that there are three issues related before the council. One is the essential fish habitat amendment. That's not the subject of this motion, but that needs to be passed, and it needs to be passed as soon as possible. Essential fish habitat needs to be protected. There's been a lot of work that's been put into that, and that needs to be protected. I wouldn't say forever, because you know the environment changes, and we need to modify as things change. Some of the areas were closed for habitat reasons, but that is one reason you close areas. This amendment that we're voting on exempts areas closed for that, and that's one of the reasons we support this. It doesn't touch either the areas originally closed for habitat protection or the areas identified by the omnibus habitat. So the omnibus amendment needs to get delivered and voted on, and whether it takes extra meetings, whether the agency can help on that, that work needs to get done. I was talking to Dave last night about it. I mean, a lot of work's been done on this. We need to conclude that, because there's a lot of other things that depend on that getting done. So that's one thing that relates to this. Secondly, the work that this vote relates to needs to move forward. And there are issues about gear conflict that various people have talked about. Vito mentioned that the industry is close to working out issues of gear conflict. That's encouraging. We need to look at issues of protected resources and make sure if various gear is in there that we're not harming protected resources. So there are issues that we've got to attend to as we open up these areas. About that, and then there's the issue that Laura and others have talked about with the scallopers on the northern edge. That again, if the essential fish habitat is passed, there's no question there's an emergency building, a pressure between attack on yellowtail and the scallop industry. You can just see the pressure building between those two. Where is the relief valve? between the hardtack on yellowtail and the scallop industry. Where is the relief valve? I think the relief valve is the northern edge of George's Bank. Maybe you all who have more experience see another relief valve. Well, that depends on the essential fish habitat, right? Another closed area decision. So there's these three related issues all around closed areas. Why are they closed? What data do we need to make decisions? We can always use more science, but there is a sense of urgency. We have to make decisions. There's never enough science. We have to make decisions. So this amendment, if it passes, allows us to move forward. It exempts the habitat areas, the old habitat areas, and the one under consideration in the omnibus. So it is worth advancing. Thank you.
John Quinn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I will be supporting this amendment. In my other life, I am an attorney, and I'm very familiar with building records. So I'd like to enter into the record a couple of additional documents, one National Standard 8, and the other the oath of office that I took the other day in taking this position. I see every one of these issues as a delicate dance between fish, fishermen, and habitat, every single one of these issues. And to suggest that it's illegal for us to try and follow National Standard 8 or for me to uphold the oath of office I took the other day, I take great umbrage at that. Under National Standard 8, we are required, take into consideration the impact on fishing communities. That's what we are doing here. How do we get into those closed areas to minimize the impact of this low assessment we are working with? At the same time, I took an oath of office with my fellow members that said we are required under law to balance competing interests in our decision making. That's what I'm doing. That's what National Standard 8 requires us. And I think this amendment is a well-crafted way to try and do that delicate dance, get some access to those closed areas, at the same time minimize impacts on communities, and at the same time protect the fish as well. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. My concern with this, as we have been moving along with it, has been the issue that Doug brought up, and I'm glad he did, and glad that Vito brought up what he said. I've been very much concerned with the potential for gear conflicts. I remember 30 years ago when I was dragging that we always had deals worked out between the fixed gear industry and the south of New England, this is, and the mobile gear industry, and we used to post them on the bulletin board at the old co-op. We knew where the fixed gear people were working, and they knew where we were working, and we managed to avoid conflicts with that kind of agreement. So I'm particularly gratified that Vito came up here with that kind of thing virtually in hand from what he said, and I think that's that for me it eliminates a lot of my angst about this, but I agree with Doug. I'd like to see the other motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned about this motion in the sense that I don't know the criteria by which sector operations plans will be evaluated. I think the industry needs to know that. I think the public needs to know that. I don't think we've done enough ecological or economic analysis on this question. I don't think we really fully vetted the legal implications of this analysis. So I have a lot of questions that and concerns about this before we move forward. I want to see relief to the industry. These are tough times. They need it. But I also don't want to see short-term gain compromising the long-term health. There are a lot of people who want to stay in this industry for a long time as stewards, as their prior generations have, and I want to give them a chance. And I don't want to do anything rash. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll preface my remarks by indicating that there will be another motion following this one, a motion that is a result of discussions we had at our last groundfish committee meeting last week. It's a motion I made that was adopted by the committee to offer up to the council here today, and it's specific to the issue of concerns about the lobster resource within these closed areas, the lobster fishery within those closed areas, the potential for gear complex, potential for displaced fishing effort from inside the closed areas to outside the closed areas as a consequence of other gear coming in, competing for ground, concern about endangered species. I suspect that once that motion is made, that there'll be unanimous support for it because it relates to the need for the regional office to evaluate any request in the sector's operation plan or plans for access requires them to consider those specific issues before they entertain any access. So that's a prefacing remark. I'm open-minded on this issue, thought about it quite a bit. Many people around the table have highlighted some of my concerns. There are pros and there are cons to this particular action. One of the cons, as I see it, is that any vessel that's allowed access into those areas through an operations plan exemption wouldn't necessarily have an observer on board. Maybe that's something that would need to be considered by the regional office in evaluating the operations plans. Maybe the sectors themselves would offer that up as an initial step. And when going in, should have an observer on board. Otherwise, we end up having vessels fishing in those areas and we get no information back as to what's going on, except extrapolations that would be rather wild and likely just guesswork. So we would need to know what's happening. So that troubles me, but I think that can be fixed by creativity on the part of the regional office. So inadequacy sampling, that's a concern. Another concern would be that by following this approach, the council continues to divorce itself from sector management by, as we said at the committee meeting, punting these very important issues to the regional office. The National Marine Fisheries Service, for the most part, is, and I suspect will in the future, be managing the ground fish fishery through sector management and the operations plans. Is that a bad thing? Well, for a while, I thought maybe it is a bad thing. I'm still concerned about it, but I'm not as concerned as I used to be, in large part because of what John Buller did yesterday. I was very encouraged by what John did. I give thanks to John for the regional office taking this approach, working with the sectors, notably the Northeast Seafood Coalition, to figure out in a very creative way how to deal with the harbor porpoise closure. To me, that demonstrated some real initiative on the part of the service and gives me every reason to be encouraged that they will indeed improve the way in which they deal with sectors, their operations plans, and the communication with this council as to what's happening with operations plans. Representing a state, I'm kind of tired of being on the outside trying to look in, but I can't because it's their operations plans. I'm not as concerned about that as I used to be. So pros and cons. The pro, of course, is, as already highlighted, and this is very important to stress, these particular closures are fishing mortality closures. We're managing with hard TACs, and yes, there are some worms with a hard TAC, especially with not very good at-sea coverage of the entire fleet, 30%, 25%. I'm not sure we know what's going on at sea, and I'm still not sure we know what's being landed. But anyways, it's a hard TAC program. These are closures implemented to deal with fishing mortality reduction primarily. The motion covers habitat concerns, so I'm open-minded on this. I'm going to do a lot more reflecting on it, following up on some of the points made by individuals in the audience and around the table. So for now, I will support this motion and look forward to continued analysis of its impacts, of its significance, and all the pros and cons.
Mary Beth, did you want to make a comment? Anyone down there? Tom Dempsey.
Thanks. I think we've all had a chance to hear a tremendous amount, and I know people have concerns, and I share many of those concerns. We focus a lot here, and as John mentioned yesterday, his listening tour has heard an awful lot about the science, and the science is admittedly flawed in many cases. But we as managers also have a responsibility to be honest about what this problem is, what we're dealing with right now. And we have a science problem. We also have a fish problem. We have some resource problems. And you don't have to look any farther than the Comstocks to realize this. Right now, any of you could get all the Western Georgia's Bank card quota you want for the change in your pocket. We're landing them at $3.50, $4 a pound. And we've caught 16% so far this year of our quota. So we have to recognize that hard tax is a management decision. It's a management decision that we have already made, and I'm not advocating that we move away from that. But we need hard tax that actually represent the biomass in the ocean. And so, you know, I share some of the concerns, the real resource concerns about where we are right now with some of these stocks. And we heard that from some people in the audience, and I think we need to start talking about that openly. There is no assessment that's going to go out there and tell us that some of these stocks are, you know, by accident, are 6-10 times where our catch rates are. We have some real problems. So, and there are risks with this approach. You know, this sector ops approach to increase opportunities, it's not a fix-all. This isn't going to make a terrible year okay for anybody. It's something to consider to mitigate some of what we're seeing in 2013. It shouldn't be undertaken lightly. I certainly don't take it on lightly. I think there are some real benefits and real risks. One of the things that has come up and one of the things that I've recognized is we're likely to see some of those risks involve whether we can get sectors operational on day one. And that's something that sectors are going to have to deal with as they choose which of these exemptions they pursue if we move this forward, because there are going to be people who have concerns who want that process to be transparent and they want to be able to provide comments in it. That's going to slow this down, and we have to recognize up front what the ramifications of that are. Hopefully we'll have more discussions about that prior to the final action in November. I will say that I'm only supportive of moving forward with this because it increases opportunities only where it's appropriate. Dr. Pierce mentioned the follow-up motion, and I think we can expand harvesting opportunities in groundfish only where sectors can demonstrate that they're not undermining our other existing management obligations and our management priorities. I think that's the right way to go. There are risks, and there will be hard decisions as sectors come forward with specific exemptions. But I support pursuing this alternative in the document, and we still have an awful lot of things to think through in terms of actually putting it on the water. Thank you.